This is AgriPulse Open Mic. I'm your host, Jeff Nally. Our guest this week is Kevin Kelly, CEO of Emerald Packaging. AgriPulse Open Mic is brought to you by NCIS, the National Crop Insurance Services. Crop insurance, the smartest, most efficient way to secure America's food, fiber, and fuel supply. AgriPulse Open Mic continues with Emerald Packaging's Kevin Kelly next. Today's Open Mic segment is brought to you by America's crop insurance industry, which is thankful for the continued support of farmers, commodity organizations, rural businesses, lenders, and lawmakers who are fighting to maintain a strong farm safety net. Providing individualized protection on more than 540 million acres of farmland, crop insurance remains the smartest, most efficient way to secure America's food, fiber, and fuel supply. This is AgriPulse Open Mic. The global produce packaging industry exceeded $400 billion in 2023 and is expected to reach almost $650 billion by 2033. Emerald Packaging is California's primary packaging supplier for leafy green producers. CEO Kevin Kelly says packaging is essential to limit food waste and maintain product quality for consumers.
We're shipping from Yuma to a Walmart in Maine. You're not going to put it on a truck very successfully day in and day out without packaging on it. You need the protection, just the simple protection. The second thing is there's the shelf life preservation, and that is a serious issue for salads. There's no way you can cut up spinach and send it off naked to Safeway anywhere. You're not going to have an Italian mixed salad. You're not going to have a 12-ounce Fresh Express Garden. None of that succeeds because it's been cut. It needs protection. It needs a package that allows it to breathe, so O2 in, and it needs a package that lets CO2 out. That's the essential equation in most packaging. O2 in, CO2 out, because we're packaging a living product here. We're not packaging jelly beans or gummy bears or anything like that. This is a living product. And as such, it needs to be preserved. And the only way to preserve it is packaging. There's just simply no way around it.
So what's been the evolution of packaging? Obviously, we're doing more cutting of the crop that is harvested, so there's much more variety available to consumers. So there's a mixed product that's available. But I know that your company's been running since 1963. How has packaging and the products used, how's this changed over so many years?
Well, I remember the first, even though I was only 18, I remember the first produce package our company produced. It was a cling wrap that barely had a logo on it, and there were some holes punched in it. The holes allowed the CO2 out, the O2 in. The protection was provided by the wrap. You could put it in a box, ship it anywhere in the country you want, not worry about waste or product damage or anything else. So that was 1979, 1980. To fast forward to today, and you're exactly right, the industry has, on the leafy green and carrots, evolved to much more of a grab-and-go, processed, ready-to-eat mix of product. And all of that is packaging-dependent. For instance, the baby carrot really wouldn't be around without the packaging at all, because once you strip off everything, and if you just threw it in a box without any protection, all that carrot stuff would be mush inside, 14, maybe 10 days. The equation's the same, CO2, O2 ratio, but the purpose has become much more critical as we've processed more and more vegetables, and as Americans eat more and more vegetables. The waste factor on shipping a box of lettuce naked versus packaged is there's a significant difference. And the retailers ding the farmers for anything they can't sell because it's damaged. And so all of this you know, the supply chain issue really has become a big piece of it too. Shipping from Yuma to Maine, shipping from Yuma to Montreal or Salinas to Montreal, whatever. You're talking about the need for protection. And we constantly exhort people to eat more vegetables. There's only one way to do it, and that's if they're packaged.
Globally, $429 billion in packaging for 2023 and anticipated to be $640 billion by 2033. Is this because there's a greater volume of produce that will be packaged, or is this the cost of packaging the product, the materials that are used to protect it, and if you will, the sophistication involved in packaging?
Yeah, a little bit of both. The costs of everything go up. It seems inexorably now, you know, if it's a penny today, it's going to be 2 pennies tomorrow. So there is a piece of that, but there's more stuff going into packaging. You rarely saw green beans in packaging 5-10 years ago. You didn't see bell peppers in packaging. But a lot of growers now, a lot of packers are seeing benefits to putting their product in a package. Green beans you're able to cut and wash and put in there. Someone just has to grab it and throw it in some boiling water or steam it or whatever. Makes it much easier on the consumer. In fact, in a lot of cases now, what retailers are finding is that consumers will buy a packaged product over a non-packaged product. So for folks who are trying to save money and not buy stuff that's going to go bad, here's a product that's going to have some extended shelf life sitting in their refrigerator ready to eat for them. And so you are seeing a shift towards packaging amongst a lot of commodities.
There's one element here that has certainly been raised as an issue in California, and I think it stretches across the country as well, but I've heard more about it from your home state, and that is that the packaging product actually touches the food that is going to be consumed. And there's been quite a bit of concern about the nature of that product, whether it's petroleum-based or any residue that might come from it. What sort of red tape headaches has this presented for your company and others?
I never thought I would be in this position in my career. I always thought produce packaging surely wouldn't get critiqued the way it has up in Canada or out in California, because it seems obvious to me that we're providing a service with it. The whole issue of, to some degree, what you're talking about, microplastics, the potential for, the theoretical potential for impurities in the plastic to end up on the food, does exist if you go and take something and heat it in the package. You are breaking down the polymer. I'm not a big fan of microwave in the package deals, things like that. I think there's real question marks there. Otherwise, there's no transfer. It's a stable product, plastic. You're talking about it touching the product for about 21 days. We're not finding residue on the food itself. You're finding in a place like Canada, where the Canadian government earlier in 2024, Canada looked at banning produce packaging. And it took a real concerted education effort with regulators up there to turn them around, because they simply didn't understand the role packaging played in produce. In fact, I've been in Sacramento talking to the assembly person from Salinas. Salinas had no idea that the ag industry was so dependent on packaging. Had no idea. Didn't know the role of packaging. Just votes to ban it, you know? And it's really this lack of understanding of the role the product plays, preserving a living product, keeping it alive so it gets to our tables. They just don't get that. They don't understand it. And so it's a constant education effort.
Back in 1999, I was on a trade mission in Asia, and one of their issues was trash bags, petroleum trash bags that did not break down in digesters. So when food waste was entered into a digester, the plastic bag was gumming up the works. And they were looking at starch-based plastics so that they would be biodegradable. And I note that in your presentation, you talk about a circular path. So is there a possibility that there are other bio-based plastics that would still protect the product, but also at the same time respond to some of the calls for sustainability from companies, from their consumers?
There are some. I've been working with biodegradable plastics, if you will, let's just call it that, for about 20 years. We ran a corn package that was being used to package spinach for Walmart. Walmart asked us to asked all the suppliers in the Salinas Valley to use it. And so we switched everything over to what's called PLA, polylactic acid. It didn't work too well. Right now, biopackaging sounds great, but it ain't there yet. And the systems to be able to sort it and tell the difference between plastic and it and whatnot, not there yet. It even takes longer to compost, about 80 days, than most composts turn, about 30 to 40 days. So it isn't even suited for industrial composting, for instance. Just a lot of challenges across the whole spectrum. If you take a bag of carrots and put it in a biopolymer, first of all, it's not going to be able to protect it just given the lack of flexibility of the material. But more importantly, it's going to raise the cost of that finished package 3%. And so you tell the consumer, well, it's biopolymers and you're going to pay 3% more because nobody can just eat the increased cost of a product. So you can't eat it. It's got to get passed on to consumers. Retailers hate doing that, but they would have to do it. And consumers won't buy. We know that. Consumers right now are fed up with price increases. So even if it's a more advanced package for a product, and if, let's say, theoretically, if that existed, I seriously doubt it would get much headway in the market right now, just given the cost burdens it would present across the whole chain, from myself to the packer to the retailer to the consumer. You would hear so much moaning by the time you got to the consumer that package wouldn't be reordered.
What legislative challenges or what regulatory challenges are you facing that are preventing you or making it difficult for you to satisfy the other elements of this supply chain?
Well, there's a concept out there right now called extended producer responsibility, which means making companies like Taylor Farms, myself, responsible for the packaging waste stream, the cost of, let's say, the cost of recycling it or the cost of landfilling it or, you know, the cost of shipping it back to us so we can recycle it, what have you. There's a lot of different ideas of what extended producer responsibility means. But there's a lot of different schemes in different states that are being put forward and adopted at the state level. So California has a scheme. Oregon has a scheme. Washington State has a scheme. Missouri is talking about a scheme. They all have different schemes. And those schemes end up often contradicting each other, have different requirements beneath them, different reporting requirements, different financial requirements. There's just such a scattershot out there right now. If there's going to be some sort of extended producer responsibility, which essentially means creating the recycling systems that don't exist today to recycle packaging materials. If we're going to have that, we really need it at the national level. Because otherwise, it's 50 different laws and 50 different states. Companies like mine just won't be able to do it because you're going to have to hire an entire department of people just to file reports with the government about what you've made and what you've collected and where it's gone. It just isn't going to work. You know, we're asking the retailers to take back material at their place. All well and good, but it turns Safeway into a solid waste dump. You know, can't do that. It's very difficult to send it back to Taylor Farms. You know, I don't know how you collect it and sort it and send it back. We can't go collect it. We're way too small for that. I think there isn't a significantly sized packaging company that could afford to do that anyway. But when I see the legislative efforts around recycling, I think they're all good, well-intentioned projects that are all stumbling over each other. And I think we just have to wipe the board clean and come up with some federal legislation or federal guidelines that set out what extended producer responsibility is, how it should look in the United States. That's how they do it in Europe. I mean, they've had recycling programs, government-run recycling programs for packaging in Germany for 20 or 30 years. We pushed that idea here 20 years ago ourselves. British Columbia's had it, but it's in line with what's going on in the rest of Canada. Here, it's just, you know, like popcorn, you know. Every state is its own kernel, and it's coming out looking differently. And it's just a nightmare for, I think, all of us who are considered producers in the world of extended producer responsibility.
The swine industry obviously was concerned about Proposition 12 in California, the standards that were put in place for production if you wanted to sell pork within the state's borders. That was an issue that they hoped to have resolved in the Farm Bill, and the Farm Bill wasn't done. But the question was, is not the Commerce Clause tripped here with all these different states and all these different rules about how an animal is going to be raised? Is this a Commerce Clause issue? Is this something that an agriculture committee or another committee in Washington really needs to shoulder up? And what are we losing if they don't get it done?
You know what? I'm so happy to hear you say that, because I've sat at my desk tapping my fingers saying this must be a Commerce Clause issue because this... It is. And I think I'm hoping that the Chamber of Commerce and the National Association of Manufacturers and the ag groups, the Western Growers Association, folks like that, are looking at these laws as they get formulated. And in a lot of cases, they're just now sort of coming out with their regulations. States say, go do this, and then they task some government department with doing it, and they send out their proposed regulations. And I have to think that it is a big issue that falls under that general heading of interfering with interstate commerce. The states are not supposed to be the ones setting the rules of the road. It's supposed to be the federal government, literally. And I'm hoping that is what ends up bringing some sense to this. I just don't want it struck down. I don't want some court to come and say, well, California's recycling legislation is in violation of the Constitution. We're going to have nothing. I think we have to have something.
You want to spitball a number for what it's costing us now?
Companies like mine, you know, are spending, we're a $90 million company, $100 million company. We're spending about $500,000 a year on this issue, and that's just the beginning. It's going to cost tens of billions of dollars to actually build a system that actually does create the recycling systems we need in the United States. Tens of billions, not a billion. And that money is going to have to come from somewhere if we're committed to it as a country. And that somewhere is usually at the federal level, or at least with federal guidelines on how to go about doing it and how to fund it.
Well, Kevin, it's obvious that there are plenty more producers than there are those that are involved in packaging. And you have issues that have implications from the farmer all the way to the consumer. What's your ask now of those who are impacted by the issues that you are facing in the packaging industry?
Oh, I would say get involved. You have to roll up your sleeves. I can't be the person going up to Sacramento and representing the produce industry on packaging questions alone. I'm the packaging guy, right? So I can explain it, but they're always looking at me slightly, you know, out of the corner of their eye, wondering, well, why is the packaging guy here and why isn't the produce guy here? Talking about how important it is. We hope our trade associations are working on this stuff. And the Western Growers Association, the Canadian Produce Marketing Association certainly is. They've done fantastic work over the last couple of years. The folks at the CPMA can spin all the way around me. They know so much more about packaging and produce than I do. But we need the produce guys themselves to be involved. It's going to be a lot more effective if the legislators in Washington and in the state houses are hearing from the big growers in their states, like say Stemelt up in Washington or Dole down here, and I'm not naming names and saying they're not involved. They may very well be, but I'm just saying that those names have a heck of a lot more impact than Emerald Packaging. And while I don't mind, and I love doing the work because it's important for me to preserve my business by doing this work, I think the growers themselves, who are used to being involved in questions like water here in California, need to understand that packaging, while it may not be as important as water, is maybe almost as important as water, and so it requires their attention as well. They need to be talking to regulators and legislators about why it's important. When the Western grower says, hey, I need you to come testify as part of a trade mission about the importance of packaging and produce so Canada doesn't ban it, I need them to say, yes, I'll come. Not, no, I won't because I'm running a bid or, you know, we got a marketing campaign or I don't think people get quite how existential the threat is with these bans that are circulating out there, proposed by people who do not understand how the average American lives, how the supply chain works. They need to be educated, and it's far more effective if it's the hog farmer or the grain producer or the leafy green producer doing that explaining as opposed to me. It carries a lot more weight, a lot more impact. And so I need folks really to get involved.
Well, Kevin Kelly, we want to thank you for taking time to be with us on this edition of Open Mic. Welcome to the new year. We certainly hope that's successful for you and for your customers. Thanks for being on this edition of Open Mic. Kevin, it is Open Mic, and today you got the last word.
Well, I'm really hoping 2025 is a better year than 2024. There was a lot of ups and downs in the year, obviously, this past year. And so I'm looking for a smoother ride this year. And with the change in government always creating turbulence, I don't know whether I'll get that smooth ride, but every first week of January, I look forward and I just hope for calm and boredom. So that's where I am this week. I want calm and boredom, and I'm believing it's going to happen.
Our thanks to Kevin Kelly, CEO of Emerald Packaging, our guest this week on Open Mic. AgriPulse Open Mic is brought to you by NCIS, the National Crop Insurance Services. Crop insurance, the smartest, most efficient way to secure America's food, fiber, and fuel supply. For AgriPulse, I'm Jeff Nellie.